This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon and welcome to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are live at the Beacon Building. We're at 814 Elm Street, right in downtown Manchester. And it is another beautiful day today outside. It's Thursday. And that's about it, really.
Well, thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you tomorrow from the Hopkinton State Fair.
It's a weird morning. It's just a weird morning. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
I had a big manager meeting, and all of a sudden I looked up and it was 10 past 11. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, I'm calling the meeting ending right now. I mean, it was too much. And then Amanda came in my office and she's asking me all kinds of questions. And I'm like, I got to get ready for the show. I can't talk right now. I just was kind of freaking out.
This is reality radio, ladies and gentlemen.
And I was starving. I hadn't eaten.
Oh.
As you can see.
Well, you brought down some of your leftovers from last night and let me sample your cheese-filled prosciutto-wrapped figs, which were fantastic.
Aren't they good?
Really such a nice meshing of flavors. You got that kind of poignant cheese flavor, and then you got the wrapping of the actual fig, and then the prosciutto give you a little bit of the salt, and then, of course, I can see you grilled it. It's burned or charred a little bit, so that adds another level. It was
another
like,
element, yep.
Wow, really, yep. Really good. Very tasty.
Yeah, they're so simple.
Yeah.
And, you know, the prosciutto comes, you know, the pieces, you know, like a couple inches wide that, and it's perfect because, and they're not that long.
Right.
And you just take it, because I've done it now twice, and you just it kind of tears in half because there's kind of like a vein down the middle.
Yep.
So one slice was two figs. I mean, I had like a system going, and it's it was really easy.
They're
so easy to put together, and I think that's like a great appetizer if you're going somewhere.
It is.
You know?
So, yeah, very nice appetizer. I made shrimp scampi last night from scratch for the first time, which it's not that hard to do, but
Tell me how you did it.
Well, I mean, the key is, and you know, this is just cooking 101, is when you get your shrimp, make sure that it's not already cooked, because it's always easier to go in and get stuff that you would use for shrimp cocktail, but don't do that because
it takes 2 seconds to cook
shrimp. Yeah, it does. It takes about, these are pretty good-sized shrimp, maybe 4 minutes, maybe four. But right when they're on the verge of not being gray anymore, but mostly pink, that's when you take it out because it's going to keep cooking. And it's just a matter of the sauce, which is some lemon, vermouth, some dry vermouth, some lemon zest, some parsley.
So lemon juice
from the lemon that you get your zest from.
Your zest.
I mean, it's so stinking easy. It's ridiculous. It was. And you want to also mince a couple of cloves of garlic. Yeah, not the stuff in the jars. Get the real deal and cut it up.
Yeah,
and that's it. There's just a little bit of a sequence to do it. But it was really easy.
So you cook your shrimp first.
Cook the shrimp
and then
first,
the sauce.
Right? In a butter sauce. You put two tablespoons of butter in, and as soon as the butter starts bubbling, you know, like it'll do before it starts to scorch, then you throw the shrimp in. One minute on that side or on the first side, then throw in the garlic for another minute, and then flip it over for another 2 minutes. Put it aside, and then you make your sauce, which is essentially the lemon juice and the vermouth. And a little bit of parsley.
And garlic.
And then you just pour it over the shrimp that's been sitting
on the side. So sauté that up a little bit and then pour it over the shrimp.
Not for very long.
So it's kind of thin, then.
It is kind of thin. Yeah, I kind of like, it's not at all cheesy or thick, which is good because it's a very clean taste. And it was really, I really appreciated how fresh everything tasted because I'd never really made shrimp scampi before. I just never thought about it. You don't have to use pasta. But I did? If you want to get a recipe, I just went to shrimp scampi recipes on Google. The first one that came up was a Food Network. I looked at that. I said, I got everything in the house except shrimp. So I just trucked down to the store, bought a pound, and it took no time to make. And I did it over angel hair pasta, but you don't have to do that.
Right.
If you're trying to cut the carbs, you still get a good bang for your buck without it. So it was a nice summer dish, and I will do it again. And the shrimp was on sale. It was not farm raised. It was about $10 a pound. So I got 1 pound.
Nice.
And had the rest for lunch before I came in today.
Perfect.
So we were both busy beavers last night with some from scratch cooking, which, You know, find the easiest stuff you can, get the freshest local ingredients you can, and you'll never look back.
Yeah. And I do the same thing. I use Google all the time for recipes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when I want to cook something, boom, just put it right in and look at the first few, and then I'll intermingle some of the recipes if one calls for this and the other calls for that. Or, you know, I love doing that.
Isn't it great to be in the store and you've got your phone and you say, well, you know, there's something on special. You know, there's a flank steak or something.
Right,
let me see.
Punch it in.
Punch it in and see what you need to get while you're there or get some recipe ideas.
Yeah, pretty
cool. It's a beautiful thing.
And I also made some corn chowder.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm not very happy with it. It's not my best corn chowder. Because you know what I did? I don't even know what I was thinking. I don't think I've ever really made corn chowder before. I mean, I make chowder. I've made usually fish chowder or clam chowder. And the biggest thing when you're making chowders, well, for me, you know, for flavor, is you get the fish base.
Yeah.
So yesterday I just had in my head chowder, fish base. I need to get fish base. So I got some fish base and I started making my chowder, all the basics on the bottom before you, you know, put your corn in. And then I realized I put fish base in and I'm like, I'm making corn chowder. That's not cool. You know?
Right.
I was like, what am I thinking?
It was probably okay, though.
It is okay.
It looks thin. Is that typically how you like to make
your
chowder?
That is how I do my chowder.
Okay.
That is typically how I do mine. Belmont Hall's chowder is pretty much like this,
too. Okay, right.
Red Arrow's used to be, but over the years it has changed, which I'm not too keen on. Oh, there's a fly on the wall right here. Can you see it?
Oh, it's a spy listening to us.
Yeah, he must be.
Okay, don't worry about it.
Right here in the middle on top of the monitor.
Okay.
Right here.
I see him. Yeah, he's a fan. You tell people to come down to the Beacon Building and watch. And, well, we've got one right there.
And they're right.
You've got 1,000 eyes on you. Just remember that.
Oh, brother. Great. Let me see here. Today's national food holiday is National Welsh Rarebit Day.
Did we talk about that?
I think we did.
We did
a couple of months ago. Toast and cream and asparagus.
Right.
We did. And you know, wasn't it the national holiday then?
Probably.
I think it was.
Yeah.
So that's not.
That's
cool.
It for the day.
Very
September 3rd.
National. And then St. Gregory, the great patron of educators, musicians, and stonemasons.
Well, that's...
I didn't even read that.
Well, that's great, but what's that got to do with food?
I know. Exactly. But I'll have to tell Daryl that.
Well, tomorrow we will be broadcasting from the Hopkinton State Fair, which opens for a four-day weekend Labor Day run, which is always fun. I went there 2 years ago. I didn't go last year, but we'll be there in the, well, it's the Fish and Game Building, but I think because I downloaded a brochure, because I'm not that familiar with the layout, having been there once, and the closest thing I could see to a Fish and Game Building was the New Hampshire Wildlife Experience Building, which is near one of the entrances. So I have a feeling that's where it is.
Well, I'll be there ahead of you, so I will text you.
You may have to do that because I'm going to be kind of cutting it, which I typically don't like to do, but I got other stuff in the morning.
Well, that's fine. I'll text you a little further drive. So that you know, and don't worry. Hopkinton Fair is not that big anyway.
No, it's not. But when you're lost. And then, of course, I'll be distracted by, you know, the bacon, guy and then the deep-fried Oreo guy. And
I hope we're next to Betsy's Donuts. Wait till you see it.
Yeah, you know, I got an email from Bob Lipman, who's out in California now covering UNH and San Jose State, and he said he's going Monday and can't wait to try Betsy's Donuts. Now, I've not had Betsy's. Is it like,
yum.
Are they a little standalone shop somewhere?
Yeah, where are they? I'm pretty sure they're out of Concord, and they just do fairs and stuff. It's a husband and wife, a little bit of an older couple,
and
their donuts are fantastic.
Is it because they're so big, or they just have a different flavor?
Well, they're big, and they're homemade. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't like a hot donut out of the fry later?
Sure.
And I like plain.
Oh, yeah,
I am into the plain donuts like that. Mm. I can't wait.
Yum.
And he has a friend that's usually down the road from him at the fair. And if you buy one of his donuts, a plain donut, take it over to the steak and cheese guy, he will cut Betsy's donuts in half, grill it, and make it into a steak bomb.
That sounds really
so
good.
So good.
You've had that before?
Betsy's husband took me over and hooked me up.
Oh, does that sound yummy?
Doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
Whoa.
So, that'll be fun tomorrow. It'd be a good time.
And then hopefully we'll have Mac and Big Cheese. They're a comedy cooking team that does a lot of outside cooking, campground cooking, backyard barbecuing. It's very funny. It's interactive. And their shows, there's one at 10 and then another one at 2. So tentatively I have them booked to come in as soon as the show starts at about 12:10 or so.
Are we still doing comedy cold cuts?
We can if we want. I've got some stuff put aside, some fair-oriented type of comedy. So that's ready to go. We'll kind of play that by ear and see if we need to.
Maybe we may we'll or may just not. Talk to Mac and whatever.
Right. But, you know, they can't stay all day. So we actually will have the time, assuming they get there on time.
Right.
And I got the guy's phone number, so I'll just try to double up on that first thing in the morning before I get there.
There you go.
It'll be fun.
And when I get there, too, I'll
scout
around for some people.
Yeah, find the giant pumpkin people and the deep fry Oreo people, or whoever interests you as well. Those are a couple of requests I have. But unfortunately, I will not get there on time to scout the fair as you will. And plus, you'll be getting your Betsy's donut with some a steak bomb on it. You're thinking about it.
I don't think I'll do that. No. But Daryl will be with me. He
okay,
will probably
good.
Do that.
Well, good. We'll send him out on reconnaissance missions.
There you go.
Cool.
For sure. I think we should just go to break.
I
Michael
think so, because we got a bunch of beer guys out there waiting to talk to us.
We have three beer guys out
there. Indeed.
And I saw a sample bag.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Okay.
Cool. I did. So stay tuned. We'll be up next with Untapped with Michael Helpley-Pierce and his guests. Stay tuned.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It must be Thirsty Thursday, because Food for Thought is about to pour you a liquid lunch with MHP Untapped. Hang out with us while we talk with brewers and beer movers and shakers, discuss New Hampshire beer culture and events, and answer calls to our studio live at 866-823-1077. And now, Carol and Mike bring you MHP Untapped.
Awesome.
I just love that intro.
Love it. Love it.
Got him turned up?
He is.
On the control board? Okay.
Oh, turn me way up. Turn me up to 11.
Yeah, a little bit more.
Me, you, us. Should I use my theater voice and project a bit better?
Could you do a little bit from Othello for us?
I could actually do some Macbeth, and I could do the dagger soliloquy if you want.
Oh, I love soliloquies. Can anybody in this room spell that?
Nope.
No way.
This is a dagger I see before me, handled towards my hand. No?
Would that be a great name for a beer soliloquy?
Ooh, yeah.
Just something you would drink by yourself.
Like, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. While pensive, I think, definitely.
Pensive? That's right. Wow, we've worked Shakespeare into today's Food for Thought.
We went from a Food for Thought show to like an SAT prep class here in about 3.5 seconds.
The two guests here are kind of watching the two of you. All three of us actually are watching.
Look at the deer in the headlights. And I guess that would make you the antelope in the headlights, right?
Yes.
But you're not playing. The deer and the antelope are supposed to play.
We're seldom as heard.
Yeah, see?
Okay.
Someone knew where I was going.
I'm take this on the road,
oh,
Michael.
My good. Yeah, yeah. You should be on the stage. There's one leaving in 5 minutes. So we got a couple of interesting guests in the studio today. We have Andy Day, owner of Cask and Vine and The Drinkery. And Andy's a good compatriot of mine and has joined me on the Tap Handle show quite a few times. And really glad to have you in the studio today, Andy.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Absolutely. And he's got Mike Giuliani, who works at Rockingham Brewery, but is also Andy Day for a day today.
Yep, I am.
So you have to tell us the backstory on this Andy Day for a day, because it sounds like you lost the contest, not you won one.
Thank you.
Well, so Andy has been running the showdown at Cask and Vine for the past couple weeks. And after many long nights studying, I correctly predicted the most beers for the showdown. Each week we had different beers go head to head. And at the beginning of the whole thing, I had predicted where each beer was going to finish that week. And at the end of it all, came out on top.
Now, is this legal, this kind of wagering? In New Hampshire?
Well, there was no exchange of money.
There
was.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I paid for the beer.
Yeah, you did buy beer.
I did pay for the beer.
There was a little bit of exchange.
Yeah, I paid to win this prize.
You paid? That's like when you get a hole in one at the golf course. You have to buy everybody around in the after the 18th hole.
Yeah.
That's
not a
right.
problem I ever have.
No, me neither.
I never get into that windmill. It just always goes right into the little hole in the ground.
Well, you have been busy doling out
I have.
Some old stock ale.
Yeah, this is from North Coast Brewing Company there in Central California. And this is sort of an old ale, stock ale. An English style would generally be one of the highest alcohol beers that they make, and they would make it for storing or cellaring. And this is one of my favorite beers. So this is a 2014.
11.8% by volume.
Yeah, that's why we're doing short samples of this. So you'll notice it's fairly sweet. It should have a good, thick, solid mouthfeel, lots of caramelly notes, and that will, over time, that will fade and become almost a little bit more like wine. I've got some of these that go back to probably 2008, I think, in the cellar, but I grabbed a 14 because I think that's a good spot for it. It's got a year and a half of age on it already, mm-hmm. So it's mellowed a little bit, but it's still pretty flavor forward.
That is really good. Actually, and you can really taste that caramel flavor.
Mm-hmm.
That is delicious.
And that'll become even more intensified over time. And I like a beer like this closer to room temperature. I think a big high alcohol malt forward beer like this is better around 50 or so.
Let me ask Andy, since you have a bit of a bistro right at one of your locations, and,
yes.
and people are asking about pairing. Just off the top of your head, what kind of sandwich are you going to serve us up with what we're drinking right here, do you think?
Oh, I think this would go fantastic with our BLT, which is actually a duck bacon BLT sandwich.
Ooh.
And I think the richness of the duck would pair beautifully with this beer.
I can get a duck bacon BLT?
No kidding.
Absolutely.
I never heard of that.
Oh, my gosh.
That is really brilliant.
Yeah. At Cask and Vine, right?
That's at Cask and Vine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's 1.5 East Broadway in Derry.
In Derry, yeah. Yep. This is our chef, George Kraft, tries to come up with unique pairings. We told him from the get-go when we opened 3 years ago, we wanted some stuff that was going to be unique and different and would pair with big, huge beers like this. And he went to task and did a phenomenal job with writing a menu that everyone has just adored.
So what other types of items do you have on the menu? I mean, I love that duck bacon BLT. That is awesome.
You know, we have some classic stuff. We have a crab cake. He does other things like pigs in a blanket with andouille sausage. So sort of a different take
twist.
On. Yeah,
yeah,
a little twist. Some really great garden salads. We have a farm, Dowie Farm in Derry, that we source a lot of our greens from. So we literally have greens cut and brought to us on a regular basis. So he tries to do a lot of stuff that's involves the local community.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Yes.
Now, I've never been to Cask and Vine, although Daryl and I will make a point to go visit.
Perfect.
I've never been there, so walk me through the door. Tell me what I might see as I walk in.
Everyone's initial impression is, wow, this is Derry? because, you know, it's a town that's definitely on the up. But we sat in there and there were a lot of empty storefronts. And you walk in and it feels like it's a place you'd see in Portsmouth or a place you'd see in Europe. Sort of that sort of bistro meets wine cellar. It's kind of got a black ceiling. So it's dark. It's kind of moody, sultry. There's no TVs. We usually play some sort of contemporary jazz. So it's just a laid-back, easygoing place. We have a nice bar made out of cherry. And then on the other wall, we have about 5 wine barrel tables with glass tabletops and candles on them. So it's a great date night. Just sit and unplug and have conversation.
Wow.
All right,
yeah.
So
I can't wait to go try.
1.5 East Broadway?
East Broadway.
Is that right near Crystal Ave or
just
where?
Before.
Just
probably,
before.
Probably a block and a half before.
Okay,
Crystal
so
Ave,
you're
towards
on
the highway.
All right, so
we're
you're
like
on
in the
west
heart of downtown.
Yes. You are the heart of downtown.
Yes.
Don't
heart
be
of
modest.
I do what I can. I do what I can.
There are some really interesting little places on that little stretch.
Like, I mean, I'm thinking Mary Ann's near there.
Mm-hmm. Not
we're
far.
Just down the street from there.
Yeah,
so
yeah maybe 4 or 5 storefronts.
The depot, the train station, we're right next door to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We're basically where East Broadway and West Broadway meet right in the middle.
Okay.
Yep. I mean, there's lots. Of, I mean, you got the Derry Opera House just down from there for some. Yeah, I mean, that's a funky little old
Very
school
funky.
Type of place.
Yes.
I've done some shows there, and it really I like that part of Derry, and it sounds like you've added a real nice little texture to it.
It's, you know, we came in there. We knew if we sat next to Sabatino's, an Italian place right next to us, mm-hmm. we were going to do that much better because now we're giving people an option. When we opened, we were going to be the place that was get a drink before or get maybe drink and dessert after. We turned into a full-blown restaurant at this point.
Good for you.
Yeah, so it's been good. And then we've watched other places open across the street. There's a place called Dre, which is tapas, and they do martinis.
They do topless martinis?
They do topless martinis, which,
nice.
I mean, that place is packed daily, if you can
Hold
imagine.
The olives, please.
Yes.
what is that place called?
Dre.
Oh,
D-R-A-E.
Wow.
Yep. And then we actually have a coffee shop two women that have lived in Derry for their entire lives have watched every incarnation of the downtown, and they finally saw what was going on, and they said, we're going to make a run for it. So the Grind has opened up, and they're on the rail trail.
Yes, I've heard of that place.
You have, great people. So
the rail trail's awesome.
It is. It is. Yeah. And it brings in people, you know, people right up from Wyndham. Mm-hmm. It's a great little spot. So it feels like, you know, downtown Derry is coming alive.
It sounds like it definitely is. I need to get my butt down there.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's got some of that older architecture. I've not been to Cask and Vine. I almost called it Cask and Dive. I'm sorry. My apologies.
No.
Michael.
I'm kidding. And, of course, you always think of Cask and Flagon down at Fenway Park.
Yes, yeah.
But Cask and Vine is the perfect name. So
I love that name. Yeah, I really like it.
I have not been in there.
Mm. We are certainly invited.
Well, thank you. Yep. And we will be coming.
And Andy is very humble about what he's contributed to the Derry scene as well. But when he moved in, there was no breweries in the. Had 603 even moved at that point?
They had not.
So he moved into a town that was having some struggling downtown issues, like a lot of our downtown areas are. Mm-hmm. And he really created a hotbed. I mean, it was really an incubator for breweries to realize that they have this guy who not only has a beer-focused menu and has 12 taps, but they're amazing taps, but he'll put you on tap if you have non-conventional kegs. So, you know, commercial brewers buy the kegs that you're used to that have that fitting on the top like you saw when you had a kegger in college or if you've got a kegerator at home. But a lot of the smaller brewers, the startups, are using homebrew kegs, and he actually has adapters that will allow him to put that on tap. So the guys that are just starting and don't have thousands and thousands of dollars to invest in kegs and cooperage, they can still be served at his bar, and people realize this is a great opportunity. So we now have 603, we have Kelson, we have From the Barrel, we have Rockingham, we have Moonlight Meadery, all within maybe 2 miles of his restaurant. And I honestly think that you are a huge piece of that evolution of that scene, dude. So that's amazing. And I just see that happening more and more as time passes.
Yeah, incubator is a good word when you put it that way. Because also in the town of Derry is the Creative Chef Kitchens, which is an incubator for people who are at home cooks looking to build a little bit of a business.
Yes.
So maybe Derry's going to get this reinvent yourself kind of vibe going on as far as people in the hospitality world go.
So it's like Derry is the new happy?
Well, let me write that down. Well, it depends on how many beers you've had at the Cask and Vine.
That's why I only brought one.
Yeah. By the way, this I'm just kind of savoring this because
I love it.
I've never had a beer this sweet yet. It doesn't turn me away, you know.
No, it's not like a sweet fruit beer that you have an orange on the rim of.
Nothing.
It's
like
more
that.
Like a sherry or a port. Mm-hmm. It's more of an aperitif, you know, before or after a meal. Like you could pair it with a meal for sure, but I would see this more as sitting on a slightly cool night, having a cigar, and maybe watching the leaves change color on the front.
I'm pouring some of this over some French vanilla ice cream.
Ooh, yeah,
that would work.
You know, because of the caramel aspect of it, just a little dollop of whipped cream, so you can add that to your bistro.
Absolutely, definitely.
This is one of those beers that every year when it comes out and they issue it once a year. And it usually sells out somewhat quickly. I make sure to get at least a 4-pack and just put it in the cellar because they only get better over time.
Wow.
They definitely do change over time. I'll bring in one that's like 4 or 5 years older than this.
And you shared it with us today.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Wow. That's what it's all about.
So it only comes out, I didn't catch that earlier. So it only comes out one time a year?
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes it'll linger on the shelves for longer than that, but they only brew it once a year, and it only issues it once a year, is my understanding. So if you can find it year-round, it's because you've got a good bottle shop, you know, like the ones that Andy owns, or maybe because somebody forgot that they had it in the back room. Some of the nicer shops you'll find will actually take a beer like this, and they'll buy multiple cases of it, and they'll age them for you, and then they'll sell them 2, 3, 4 years later.
So you've got, would you say, a dozen taps?
Dozen taps.
And we've got close to 40 microbreweries in the state. How do you decide? Do you appreciate the face-to-face interaction that perhaps a new brewer might have? And how do you say no to somebody?
We definitely have a lot of personal relationships with brewers. Mm-hmm. Where we started was with White Birch. He's been in business 6 years now. So we've seen him and become very close friends. We've brewed beer with him and done some great things.
Bill Herlicka, you're speaking
of. Bill Herlicka, yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then obviously as breweries started to open up around us, we brewed a beer with Kelson recently, a Russian Imperial Stout, and we plan on doing that once a year. So, and then that'll be one of those types of beers that we'll sit and we'll cellar. But a lot of it comes down to personal relationships. I value relationships over anything, and I'd rather see good people having their beer displayed in a place that is meant to showcase new and upcoming breweries. In fact, the next 4 months, we're going to have nothing but independent breweries. No distributors will be involved at all.
So even if, say, Amiskeg is distributing a microbrew, you would not take their product?
Well, part of the contest that Mike won, part of that was we actually put our distributors against each other along with three independents to see who had the best beer.
Interesting.
And at the end of the day, there was only going to be one winner. And as it turned out, if it was going to be an independent that won, all the independents won. And it happened to be that From the Barrel Brewing out of Londonderry won. So we've actually, Mike and I have been driving around today picking up beers from all the independents, and they're going to be showcased on our draft line.
And this all weighed on his palate?
No.
No?
Well, yes.
Everybody's kind of. Palate.
Everyone's palate. Yeah. But yes,
I was part of it.
He correctly chose the most winning beers.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah.
And then now we're currently sitting on 7 kegs in the back of the truck as we speak.
Right now?
Right yes. now.
Yeah, we could turn this into a serious party.
Yeah. How do I lock this door from the inside? So Orange Street, just a few blocks up,
yes,
Andy.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Right there. Just bring a tap.
Yep.
Wow. Break time?
I think it's break time. Yes, we're having a great
time.
Too
much fun. We have to kind of ratchet it back.
Gotta moderate.
Yeah, exactly.
See, we've all had this 11.8% alcohol beer, which is absolutely delicious. But you're listening to Food for Thought live at the Beacon Building. MHP Untapped is here with his two guests, Cask and Vine. I can't wait to go check it out. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
For Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Brings us to 12:46 on Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We're brought to you by Ipswich Clam Bake at 791 2nd Street, Manchester, ipswichclambake.com. Also by Healthy Solutions Spice Blends, spiceblends.com. Also want to remind you that coming up this weekend, it's Laconia Harley-Davidson Labor Day Party and Sweet 16 New Model Launch Event. A long name, but it says it all. It's the launch event is happening Saturday from noon to 3, and by all accounts, the weather will be so good for this. I should get a nice turnout at Laconia Harley-Davidson and enjoy a rockin' free party. And last day to enter the much-anticipated 2015 Harley-Davidson Street Glide Raffle. Only 5,000 tickets will be printed, benefiting the New Hampshire Food Bank. The live drawing takes place at 3 o'clock during the event. See all the new 2016 Harleys there. And again, help out the New Hampshire Food Bank. It's Laconia Harley-Davidson's Labor Day Party and Sweet 16 New Model Launch Event from noon to 3 in Laconia this weekend, Saturday.
All right. Michael, take it away.
Where am I taking it?
Well, you know what? I saw some postings on the Hop Talk. So how did that go?
We had a great time. Seth Simonian, who we had on here a few weeks ago and actually who covered for me while I was off in Minnesota, don't you know? He had a great event. We had 6 brewers presenting and a distiller. We had quite a few other brewers on site. We had some wonderful attendees. I got good feedback from folks about how the event proceeded. So we actually have another one planned for November 7th, and that's going to be at Red Hook in Portsmouth. So we anticipate that's going to be a really good event. It's going to be fairly similar format, TED Talk style format, where you have 10 or 15 minutes of the brewers telling their story while you're drinking their beer. You're relaxed. You're not fighting with crowds. You're not, you know, under tents outside. It's a great setting, and I think he's going to have a lot of success going forward with this. And for some reason, he asked me to come back and MC it, so I guess everybody's stuck with me again.
Good for you. Well, I'm sure you're a great MC. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, for a shy guy, he does okay with the microphone.
He's not
yeah,
shy.
I go to my car and cry when I leave here. You have no idea. I have like PTSD for a week. It's not pretty.
Stop it.
I do have a couple of other events I want to promote. We've got the New England Homebrewers Jamboree, and that is coming up next weekend. That will be the 12th. People show up as early as the 10th, which is Thursday. You can find information at homebrewersjamboree.com. To break the event down in a nutshell, we've got homebrewer and homebrew clubs from all over New England coming in. They set up tents in a row. Homebrewers donate kegs of homebrew, and there's a suggested donation to Make-A-Wish on the way in, which is not mandatory, and you drink free samples all day. There's probably 400 taps at any given time, and it's stuff that could never happen commercially because there's no bottom line and there's no stockholders. It's just homebrewers who decide they want to do something cool. Maybe as simple as a lager or a cream ale, or it could be a Russian Imperial peanut butter stout aged in Merlot casks. You just never know what you're going to see. Live music the whole time. It's family-friendly, kid-friendly, dog-friendly. It's up in Tamworth, New Hampshire, and this will be our 19th year of holding the event. We made well over 10 grand for Make-A-Wish last year.
That is wonderful. We have Make-A-Wish has a regular segment every Tuesday, so that is great.
So that's a great event. The Tap Handle Show will be in full force, and so come on through at 9/12 for the Homebrewers Jamboree.
There, you know, it just seems like there's so many beer events that happen. Like, you're busy like almost every weekend.
Every other weekend. I still do have a wife that every once in a while wants to see me. Not that often, but once in a while she wants to see me. There are, especially this time of year, this seems like this is when all the beer festivals happen. But yeah, we're working to try to create some buzz around the wintertime too, when people generally don't do outdoor festivals in New England. We've got some cool stuff coming up on the 7th of December. We're actually doing a 7-course beer pairing dinner at New England's Tap House Grill in Hooksett, and that will be 6 beers and 1 spirit, gin spirits, and that will start at 5 and we'll run until about 10 o'clock, and I'll have tickets available when I come back in 2 weeks.
Nice.
That's a great place. I became acquainted with them as soon as they opened, and then I moved out of Hooksett, which killed me. I said, finally, Hooksett's got a decent restaurant.
That's true.
And then we moved away. That was just inevitable. But they were former neighbors of mine, and they do such a good job.
Absolutely.
They really, really do. Now, I'm looking at Andy Day's shirt. He of the Drinkery Shop in Cask and Vine. And it's the logo of the little boy eating something out of a bowl. It's an old school kind of graphic. It's breakfast stout. Isn't that the logo or something that was not permitted to be sold in New Hampshire of that particular beer?
Yes, it is.
So you are a rebel, after all.
Oh, yes. Actually, so much so that last year we actually held a rally, and we were pouring breakfast out, because you can pour it on draft. You just couldn't have the bottle in the state. And we invited people to come in, and we were giving them a discount on their beer if they would sign a petition that we could send to the Liquor Commission to take a second look at the label. The Liquor Commission then told us, you need to take this to the lawmakers, because we're just enforcing the law.
So in other words, they're passing the buck.
Well, eventually, this is what it's been. We started with the salesman, went to the distributors, then we went to the Liquor Commission, then we went to the state, and the state is the end of the line. It didn't pass last year. We had Keith Murphy, who owns Murphy's, sponsored the bill this year, and we went up again, and we pleaded our case. I went up there with a few different items. You know, there are other bottles in the state that have children on them that are questionable. There's Tommy Gun Vodka. My kids were all about the Tommy Gun Vodka. They wanted nothing to do with breakfast stout, but, Dad, I want that gun. So, you know, we sat down, and the lawmakers actually took a look at this year, and they're like, seriously, we can have adult chocolate milk on the shelf in the state liquor stores, but we can't have breakfast stout. So it inevitably passed. It kind of went. It went to the House, then it went to the Senate. The governor vetoed it.
Yes, I recall that.
But then the House came back and said, we want this. And then the Senate came back and said, yeah, we're going to take this. So they've adopted the change. On August 23rd, the law became effective. And now we're just waiting for founders to resubmit the label. And by all rights, there should be no reason that we can't have this label approved for this year.
What a waste of everybody's time, quite honestly.
Yeah.
You know, for something that has no intention to encourage children to drink illegally, because we know nobody under 21 ever does.
And it's got no efficacy in causing children to drink, because they don't drink beer that costs $4 for a 12-ounce bottle. They're like Thunderbird, Mad Dog, you know, Coors. They're not looking for an oak-aged breakfast. Come on, people. Yeah. Let's get real here.
Let's get real.
They'd spit it out if you gave it to them.
Are there other, because I know you're somewhat of an activist within, you know, your trade organization, anything else that's kind of on the books that we should be watching for?
I know another hot topic this year was growler filling. A lot of other states allow, certainly allow breweries to fill growlers, but they also allow bottle shops like mine to fill growlers, people to take home. And there's certainly a lot of advocacy amongst retailers to be able to do this. A lot of the breweries didn't want to see this happen. So this was something that looked like it was slated to go through, and there were so much against it. So many breweries stood up and said, no, we don't want to see this happen.
We're talking the big boys, right? Not the microbrews?
We're talking mostly the micros, because the big boys would like to see it happen, because for them it means that they're going to sell a heck of a lot more beer.
Okay.
The problem is, I think, is that the smaller guys are looking at it like, well, the big boys can incentivize big boy beer, and now how are they going to get their beer poured or even stand next to, price-wise, these other beers? So I think that they stood up and said, we don't want to see that happen, so my guess is that in the next year, you'll see that bill come up again, and there'll be a whole argument on either side again. I do see that there's probably going to be a lot more push to see that go through this year.
How does the growler situation get around open containers? Because I've never bought one. So, you know, like when you walk away with a wine that you opened, it's corked, and then it's put in a bottle, and it's vacuum sealed or whatever. So how does the growler situation work to keep you out of trouble?
They did actually draft up a complete list of rules that if in order to actually do this, you had to have this many craft beers in your store just to begin with. Also, you'd have to take a course for proper training and filling. And then they specified certain types of containers you could fill and that they would need to be sealed with one of those sort of plasticky tape things over the top.
Okay.
So that, yes, you could bring that home. I think that would also have to apply to all the breweries, obviously, because right now you can just screw the top on and it's good to go. So this would involve a lot more than just, okay, you can fill growlers now.
I think what Mike was talking about as much was if you get pulled over with one in your car,
yeah,
how
exactly.
did the cops deal with it?
And I think, so that answers the question about the plastic.
But for right now, that's not happening. Most breweries don't put the tape over the top. And I think if you got pulled over and you had a growler that was missing 16 or 24 ounces, it would be a very different story than if you had a growler that was clearly still full.
Right.
So I think it's a discretion call on the on the part of the boys.
I always
blue.
Put that stuff in my trunk, you know, if ever there's in. I don't know if that even still qualifies, but anyway.
I just drink the whole thing before I leave the brewery, and that way I avoid all trouble.
That's what parking lots are for, right? Yeah.
That's why you guys have the stack of big brown bags, right?
Absolutely.
Listeners, get on over to Cask and Vine and also the Drinkery just a few doors down. So if you taste something in Cask and Vine, you can go buy it over at the Drinkery just a few doors down from there, right on Main Street in Derry. Thank you guys for coming in. That was great. Always learn something. Love it. Michael, thank you.
Good to be here. Always. I look forward to this.
We're at the top of the hour. Stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.